ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60. Krishna teases Rukmini. Text number 10. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Raja Putri Sita Bhupair Lokapala Vibhuti Bhi Mahanubhavai Srimadbhi Rupaudarya Balorjitai Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Raja Putri Psita Bhupair Lokapala Vibhutibhi Mahanubhavai Srimadbhi Rupaudarya Balorjitai Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Raja Putri Psita Bhupair Lokapala Vibhutibhi Mahanubhavai Srimadbhi Rupaudarya Balorjitai Sri Bhagavan Uvacha The Supreme Lord said Rajaputri O Princess, Ipsita, you were desired. Bhupai. It's on. Maybe turn up a little bit. By kings, Loka, of planets, Pala, like the rulers. Vibhuti-bihi, whose powers? Maha, great. Anubhavai, whose influence? Srimadbhi, opulent. Rupa, with beauty. Audarya, generosity. Bala and physical strength Urjitai abundantly endowed The Supreme Lord said My dear princess you were sought after by many kings as powerful as the rulers of planets They were all abundantly endowed with political influence wealth beauty generosity and physical strength Tan praptanartino hitva choidyadin smaradur madan datta pratra svapitra cha kasmano varvrishe saman. Since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chedi and all those other suitors who stood before you maddened by Cupid? Why instead did you choose us who are not at all your equal? Rajabhyo bhibhyato Rajabhyo bhibhyata subhru samudram sharanam gatan balavad bhi kritadveshan prayastyak Nipasanan. Terrified of those kings, O lovely browed one, we took shelter in the ocean. We have become enemies of powerful men, and we practically abandoned our royal throne. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments on this verse as follows. The Lord's mentality here can be understood as follows. When I gave Rukmini a single flower from the heavenly Parijata tree, Satyabhama showed such a torrent of fury that I could not pacify her even by bowing down at her feet. Only when I gave her a whole Parijata tree was she satisfied. Rukmini, however, did not display any anger even when she saw me give Satyabhama the whole tree. So how can I enjoy the nectar of angry words from this wife, who never feels jealousy, who is supremely sober, and who always speaks pleasingly? Thus considering, the Supreme Lord decided, if I speak like this to her, I will be able to provoke her anger. This is how some authorities explain Krishna's speech to Rukmini. According to the Acharya, here the words balavad bhi kritadvishan prayaha which are balavad bhi is translated here toward those who are powerful, kritadvishan having showed enmity, prayaha for the most part. According to the Acharya here, the words balavad bikrita dvishan prayaha, having shown enmity to the powerful personalities, the other kings, on the whole, indicate that Lord Krishna opposed almost all the contemporary kings during his incarnation. That means he was basically an enemy of everybody. Befriending only a few, such as the Pandavas and loyal members of his dynasty. Of course, as stated in the beginning of the 10th canto, Lord Krishna appeared specifically because the earth was overburdened by innumerable bogus kings and he wanted to remove this burden. Finally, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word jaktya nripasanam, giving up the king's throne, indicates that after Lord Krishna killed Kamsa, he humbly gave the royal throne to his grandfather, Ugrasen, although the Lord himself was entitled to it. Om Agyana Jamirandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Sri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Kirim Yad Kripata Maham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. So here we have an explanation of from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as to why Krishna was teasing Rukmini. You know, there was obviously a big difference between Rukmini and Satyabhama. in that Rukmini was more compliant, if you like, or acquiescent to Krishna's desires. And was more inclined was more satisfied, shall we say. Because it's interesting, it's mentioned here that Rukmini wasn't angered when Satyabhama was given the whole Parijata tree. Satyabhama became very upset because Rukmini was given a Parijata flower from a heavenly planet, and she was so upset and angry that Krishna, the only way he could appease her was going to the heavenly planets and getting a whole tree. And that caused, you know, that was caused a fight with the demigods. So it was quite a lot of effort that Krishna had to go, well, externally anyway, to keep his wife happy. But Rukmini was not disturbed. But it's interesting, in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains that actually Rukmini was more self-controlled, I guess you could say self-controlled in one sense, because actually she was angry. And her concealing that anger is an examplement, is an example of concealment. It's given as an example of concealment. She was actually angry, but she was more controlled, and so she was able to conceal her anger. So she was upset, actually. But she was more compliant with what Krishna wanted and more compliant with his desire. Just her nature, the nature of her personality, whereas Satyabhama was much more fiery personality and more inclined to be argumentative. You know, some people are like that. It's a nature of personality. When I was in the shower this morning, I was just thinking of an example of this. An example that sometimes you get that in a guru-disciple relationship. You have disciples who are very compliant with the spiritual master. Whatever the spiritual master asks them to do, then they'll do it. You know, yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada, yasya prasada, nagati gutopi. If you don't please the spiritual master, then you won't achieve the desired. You won't get the ultimate destination, right? If you want to please Krishna, then you have to please the spiritual master. But there are some disciples who will argue with the spiritual master, right? Or question the order of the spiritual master. I was thinking of an example of that was the disciples of Prabhupada before his disappearance. Prabhupada told the devotees that he wanted to go to Govardhan for parikrama. And Lokanath Maharaj and other disciples, you know, Prabhupada gave them that instruction. They went and organized it. But then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj then, and they were horrified with the idea. If you take Prabhupada on parikrama, you kill him. Huh? And as Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained, you know, at that time he couldn't conceive of the fact that Prabhupada wouldn't be with them. Right? Interesting, you know, he explains that sequence in his diary and in letters he's explained how at that time their whole mood was, you know, somehow or other keeping, you know, there just wasn't in their mental construct that, you know, Prabhupada would leave. Right? So there was arguments over this point. No, we should do what Prabhupada wants us to do. He's Krishna's representative. He knows what Krishna wants. This is his desire. And the other devotees said, no, we're not going to do it. So one is disobeying the spiritual master's order, ostensibly, externally, right? And the other one wants to obey the spiritual master's order. So who's correct? Of course, you know, there are both of them are correct in one sense because they're both understanding the mission and the mood and the desires of the spiritual master. And the desire of Krishna too, for that matter. So in one sense, neither are wrong as such, but we see in the nature of the personality, there's a different mood or a different approach to fulfilling the order, fulfilling the desires of pleasing the spiritual master. Because certainly the mood of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and shall we say the Tamal Krishna Maharaj camp, was going to be pleasing to Prabhupada. Right? This is actually, it's interesting here. Satyabhama chastising Krishna, it was actually pleasing to him. Krishna likes to be chastised by his devotees. Even though he's running in fear of Mother Yashoda waving a stick at him, actually, Krishna derives great pleasure from that that relationship between him and his mother. Right? You know, when your mother is chasing you with a wooden spoon, it's not that she doesn't like you. She just thinks that you're being silly or misbehaving, and so therefore she wants to correct you for your own benefit. So Krishna liked that, you know, that Satyabhama got upset because he gave Rukmini a little flower, or a big flower for that matter. She got upset. But Krishna also wanted to try and see if he could provoke that mood of anger in Rukmini. Krishna must have known that it was there. Because, as Rupa Goswami explains, Rukmini was actually angry that she only got a parijata flower and Satyabhama got the whole tree. Not a safe spot to sit, I don't think. So, this is, you know, when a husband is being chastised by the wife, then actually the husband is enjoying. You know, nobody wants, you know, you don't want people around who just do what you tell them to do all of the time. It gets boring. You want a bit of excitement in life. So Krishna's thinking to himself, so how can I enjoy the nectar of angry words from this wife? He wanted to be chastised by Rukmini, who never feels jealousy, who is supremely sober, and who always speaks pleasingly. Right? He wants a bit of excitement in life. So Krishna was thinking, if I speak like this to her, I will be able to provoke her anger. This is how it's sometimes explained. There is another explanation given. Interesting explanation. It comes further on. And I'll insert that here just to get add more dimension to the picture, add more to the perspective of the picture. Rukmini was a little proud of her self-control and of her closeness to Krishna and always wanting to, you know, always being very pleasing and satisfying to Krishna. Because she's very elevated, very elevated devotee. But actually she was feeling jealousy. She was feeling some jealousy when Satyabhama got the whole tree. But she controlled herself. But Krishna doesn't like, Prabhupada explains, the acharyas explain, that Krishna doesn't like to see pride in a devotee. And so therefore sometimes Krishna, out of affection for the devotee, acts in a way so as to remove that pride. I was reading last week actually, I think I mentioned it last Friday also, but It's interesting that, you know, the qualifications of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also is, this is the first, Trinada Pisa Nityana Torora Pisa Nishnana Amanade Manadina Kirtanaya Sadahari. The followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, humility is the first qualification that a follower of Mahaprabhu is required to cultivate or to have. Trinada Pisa Sunitjana Torora Pisa. So one should be more humble than a blade of grass, right? Which means, you know, the example of the blade of grass is that, you know, when a blade of grass is trodden on, it is also acquiescent, I guess. You know, if somebody treads on you and you're a blade of grass, there's not a lot you can do about it. You basically go with the flow, right? Crunch. But of course, a blade of grass, once it's been trodden on, then just comes back up again. Right? And torora pisa hishtana, another feature of that, then one has to be tolerant. You know, in the material world, there will be setbacks. There's not much you can do about it. That's the nature of the material world. So one has to tolerate the difficult, like a tree. A tree is, you know, the branches are chopped off of a tree, used for firewood. The people come and carve their initials in the side. The tree can't protest. And yet, even though the tree may be abused or whatever, it still gives its shelter freely, gives its fruit freely to others. The tree is very magnanimous in that it gives freely of itself, even if it's abused. The nature of a devotee, actually. The devotees, even if they're abused by others, will still freely give their association and shelter. And one is recommended to not expect praise or, you know, adoration or respect, basically. One doesn't expect respect from others. Yet, on the other hand, conversely, one should be always respectful to others. Right, so we don't expect any respect for ourselves. If people are disrespectful, then what to do? But at the same time, we should be respectful. You know, gentlemanly. We should deal with others mildly. Although, mind you, depending on our relationship with others, we may not do that also, because, you know, there are circumstances where a devotee may not deal mildly with others. Like if he's dealing with his students, for example. The guru dealing, or the teacher, or even the parent. Did I mention this last week? Anyway, but the I don't think I did. The father and the guru are to be treated equally, or to be respected equally. When a father tells you to do something, then you should do it. Is that right, Jatinder? If your father told you to do something, then you would do it straight away, right? Yep. No question. If the spiritual master tells you to do something, then it should just be done immediately, straight away. So sometimes the guru or the spiritual master may not deal mildly with his students one's children. You may not deal mildly with them. But ordinarily, in our general dealings with others, we should be dealing with them respectfully. But sometimes there will be exceptions because of the nature of the relationship. So it appears that Rukmini was actually quite a mild character and respectful, but a little proud. So therefore Krishna because the funny thing is that Krishna wanted to stimulate the anger of Rukmini, but he got a completely different response. He was shocked by the response that he got. Because Rukmini was so deeply absorbed in love for Krishna. Mr. Satyabhama was. The example of Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Lokanath Maharaj. They were all absorbed in wanting to please Prabhupada. Yet their mood or their mission, their actions were almost diametrically opposed. Yes, we should go on the parikrama. No, we shouldn't. Huh? So, Rukmini was deeply absorbed in that loving mood, just as Prabhupada's disciples were deeply absorbed in the mood of rendering service to him, but in a different way. Because she was so deeply absorbed in love for Krishna, then when Krishna tried to stimulate her anger, she could only think of her separation from the Lord. And as a consequence, then he stimulated other emotions, which is a measure of her deep love. Some of the symptoms of prema, bhakti, is dissolution, death. So practically speaking, Rukmini, when Krishna was suggesting that she should go and find another husband because he wasn't qualified, then all she could think of was separation from Krishna. That was such a shock for her that she fell unconscious. She lost so much weight that her bangles all fell off of her arms. And her clothes became loosened. And her hair became all scattered. And she just fell on the floor. Then Krishna was completely shocked by her response. Then he had to change his whole program. Change his whole mood and had to pick her up and give us, speak sweet words and mop her. Mop her brow. He wasn't able to stimulate her anger. Wasn't able to make her angry. She just fainted. Too much teasing. Very funny. The next statement by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is that Krishna is saying here, you should have married one of these more qualified kings. Effectively, what have I done? I've basically made an enemy of everyone. So why did you marry me? Somebody who's now, practically hated by every king and every qualified person. And of course, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya cha duskritam. So, one of the reasons for Krishna's appearance is because there was an overburdening of the earth by these unqualified kings. Okay, they're kings. And of course Krishna's saying here, in one sense Krishna's being sarcastic. There's all these qualified persons that are much more qualified than me. Right? In the sense that Krishna was just, like a Vaishya, cowherd boy. He wasn't actually a king. It's one of the things that he says to Rukmini is nobody knows who I am. They can't work out whether I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj, or whether I'm the son of Vasudev. They just don't know who I am. And I'm not even sure myself. He's just teasing it. I'm not very qualified. Of course, these so-called kings are all belligerent characters causing great distress for the earth because of their lack of respect for religious principles and so forth. And of course, that was Krishna's mission. But he was using that as a means for teasing Rukmini. And then the last reference here is to Krishna's giving up the king's throne. He said that You know, I won the king's throne. I won the king. I killed Kangsa. But then I gave up the throne to Ugrasena. And then, you know, hid in the ocean. I went, you know, because I was scared of all of these kings. You know, I'm a bit of a coward, actually. Didn't you know? I ran away from Jarasandha. Because, I mean, it's... Krishna is just being humorous, I guess, in one sense. Because, you know, he defeated Jarasandha, you know, 17 times already. And actually, the reason why Krishna went to Dwarka was to protect the devotees. It was actually to serve the devotees. Because, you know, there were just all these kings coming to Mathura and fighting and carrying on and creating a big disturbance. The reason why he left Vrindavan, actually, was to stop the demons from coming to disturb the environment for the devotees. That's why Krishna did it. Well, one of the reasons. Huh? To protect his devotees, because Krishna is always thinking about how to reciprocate with the devotees. Of course, there's some very funny in the Krishna book. It's not in the Bhagavatam, but it's in the Krishna book where Prabhupada explains. I guess he's quoting. My guess is I didn't read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, but I'm assuming that Prabhupada got it from his writings, where he says, you know, that all of the girls that associate with me end up being broken-hearted because I always leave them. You know, you ask the gopis of Vrindavan what Krishna's like and how honourable a character he is. I told them that I loved them, but then I left them. So he was... That's one of the reasons why he said, well, you should consider getting another husband. I'm not a very good husband. Of course, as Prabhupada points out, by this stage, you know, Rukmini was already been married for quite a, you know, 30 years to Krishna and had children and grandchildren. So, you know, this whole idea. And if you look at it also in the context of, you know, Vedic culture, you know, this whole suggestion that Krishna is making is just ridiculous, because a woman never leaves a husband. And without the husband, then a woman is unprotected. Just like, you know, there have been these articles about, I know there was this program about the widows in Vrindavan. You know, the women whose husbands depart in India is a very sad situation, because, you know, you have the situation where the girl, when she gets married, becomes part of the husband's family. But in some situations where the family is very poor, and the husband dies, then the girl becomes a burden on the family, and so they push them out. Then they become, you know, they can't marry again, or well, at least these days they it's not uncommon. That's not uncommon, but in the traditional Vedic, you know, in the traditional culture, then she would just become a widow. And in a family where the economics were strained, then, you know, they would be pushed out, sent off to Vrindavan. And so you have what they call the widows of Vrindavan, who are really, you know, in a very sad condition. So, you know, considering that environment for Krishna to suggest to his wife, you know, you should leave me, it's like she's been kicked out. And that, you know, that's a great, you know, that means, and you know, you can't go back to your father, you can't go back to your family. It's a disgrace for the family. Huh? Of course, things are changing now, but anyway, it's just, you can see why Rukmini responded in a particular way that she did, because she's just devastated by the suggestion. So anyway, these are a number of points. And this is just the beginning, really, of Krishna. In the Krishna book it's called Krishna's Talks with Rukmini, but here it's actually called Krishna Teases Rukmini. Interesting. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Krishna Gata Prabhu.
And past time of Lokeshwara Prabhu Maharaj, he passes away. Mm. And he said before that, he said that his will is to be dragged and
dragged through the streets of Navadvip.
Let's see how about this Navasaraswati temple, object with this.
Yeah.
And then, but the other party, they were saying, no, we should follow.
Yeah.
But they were wrong.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You know, understanding the mood is important. Yep. The mood of the spiritual mind. So he, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur understood the mood of Gokishore Das Babaji, and then he's, you know, thinking himself very humble and unqualified. This is the nature of a devotee, especially a Mahabhagavat. Right? But even though he expresses that mood, doesn't mean that you should necessarily, yeah.
So as we know, the devotee shouldn't, doesn't like to be glorified.
Doesn't like to be glorified.
Yeah, but on the other hand, we can say glorification to the devotee should be offered the affection, and the devotee happily accepts that affection.
With affection?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah, sure.
The devotee happily accepts that affection in which the glorification is offered.
Mm.
So in one sense, he kind of shuts his ears to the glorifying word, but he's happy about the affection, you know?
Yes. The affection. Yeah, yes, that's a very important point. You know, we have these situations, we have the situation where child abuse is a big issue. Huh? And to the point where, you know, now a parent can't chastise their children. It's illegal to chastise the children. But there's a big difference between the chastisement that a parent might give a child. You know, it may appear to be the same, in the sense that, you know, some firmness might be used, but some physical punishment might be there. But there's a difference between, you know, abuse and chastisement. They look the same, they look similar, but one's done with affection and concern and the other's just done out of a mood of exploitation. So yeah, you know, whenever we look at a situation, then you have to also understand the underlying elements of relationship, you know, rasa, basically, relationship. Good point. So, yeah.
That's why also glorification, which is not offered in affection, it really feels...
Well, it's called sarcasm. Yeah, it's often...
like some empty flattering,
yeah,
words and lip service and glory, you know, it's
yes. Yeah. Yeah, devotees generally... You know, there's a statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada quotes about, or Krishna Das Kaviraj actually quotes, where it says, you know, one should not praise nor criticize. Right? But of the two, one can neglect to follow the first, which is to not praise. Right? But certainly one should not criticize. Although, as I mentioned before, you know, it's actually the duty of the king or the duty of the parent or the duty of the guru sometimes to critique. Because that's, you know, that's the nature of the relationship. But ordinarily, in ordinary circumstances, it's recommended we shouldn't praise and we shouldn't criticize. But of the two, we should not criticize, but we can neglect sometimes to praise. You know, we can neglect the instruction to not praise. But again, you know, in praising someone, or at least showing some appreciation, it shouldn't be overdone, because then it just becomes, it is distasteful. Right? Yeah. Yes, but depending on the relationship. You know, we shouldn't criticise, as Prabhupada mentions, we shouldn't criticise someone who's not our student or not our dependent. And criticism can be done in a positive way by just giving good advice. You know what I mean? So we might see something as wrong, rather than say, oh, that's wrong, then you can say, how about this? But then, even then, it should be done carefully. You know, it should be done in the right environment where, you know, perhaps others aren't present, or, you know, those whose relationship is junior and subservient, or subservient, I guess is reasonable, is fair enough. You know, like I don't go to Prana in front of his assembly and tell him, here's how I think you should improve your school, while all of his students are standing there. Right? I'm Prana's friend, and I might see something that could be improved, and I might just suggest to him, have you considered this? In his office, you know, while nobody else is there, and we're just having a chat over a cup of tea or something. Right? Then that's in the supportive mood. So the way you do it is, my father was a school teacher and a headmaster. You know, one time at Solomon Town Primary School, in front of the whole school, a man jumped the fence and came up and punched assaulted him in front of the whole school. I mean, it was just such a disaster. Something had gone wrong with his kid, with his child, and this man took it. My father had to file charges against. Oh God, it was a mess. So that's inappropriate behaviour. Even though he might have been justified, something might have gone. You know, there might have been a mistake that my dad made. I could never ascertain that. How is he?
Yeah, and how?
How does he do that?
He's transcendental to these modes of material nature, fruitive activities of the material world.
Yeah. How is he? Because I don't think it's how is he. It's just that he is. You know, how does Krishna do anything? Well, that's hard for us to explain because we don't know how Krishna does things. He does things because he's achincha. This is one of the reasons Krishna is achincha, which means you can't work out how he does stuff. You can get an idea in that we have the capacity to do things which are sometimes astounding. And we can understand that, because Krishna mentions in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, I am the ability in man. So sometimes we do things and we think, wow, how did that happen? That's coming from Krishna. Even sometimes Krishna is amazed himself at what he does. As a part of Krishna Leela, Krishna is, his yoga maya potency and his Leela Shakti covers him even.
Death
doesn't bother Krishna. Krishna says, you know, that's not a problem for Krishna because his body is transcendental. So even though it appears that he's changing bodies, actually he's not. He's eternal. Something that has to be meditated upon. We hear the descriptions and sometimes we think, how does he do that? I can't do that. How does he do it? And the fact of the matter is that we just have to meditate on how Krishna is doing it and we can't. And you just have to meditate on that. It's just a fact. So the devotees. So how is Krishna transcendental? Krishna is the source of these things. Right? He's the master and the controller. What is it? Bhakta Bharta Maheshwaraha. Upadrasta anumanta cha Bhakta Bharata Maheshwara Hats, described in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He is the master. He's the enjoyer. He's the overseer and the permitter. He's the one who's facilitating everything. So, that's his Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Suryate Svabhaviki Jnana Balakriya Cha. He's, by his different potencies, by his multifarious Parasya Shakti, he has many Shaktis, potencies. And by those different potencies, he's manifesting the creation. And as a result of those, you know, because he's the source and he's also the controller of those things. He is not controlled by the three modes of material nature like we are, or influenced. So when Krishna appears, even though it appears that he's acting like an ordinary human being, this is why, you know, Krishna's birth and Krishna's disappearance are very bewildering for the materialistic persons, because it appears like he's acting like an ordinary human being. It looks like he's being influenced by the modes of material nature and acting in a particular way. But if you analyse Krishna's pastimes very minutely and very closely, then you realise this person is not an ordinary person. Right? And of course Krishna affirms that by his statements in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not affected by these things. One of the reasons is that Krishna is completely pure. And his motivation is basically for the benefit of everyone. He's not really concerned about himself. Doesn't need to be. He's Atmarama, self-satisfied, but very much concerned about the benefits or the looking after his devotees. So how does he do that? The best way to find out how he does that is to hear his, you know, to hear the pastimes, to meditate on the pastimes, and to relish, you know, the character of Krishna, and just how, you know, there's a chapter in the 10th canon of the Bhagavad called Wonderful Krishna, where there's just a description of all the amazing things that Krishna does. Huh? So there we can hear how he does it. Well, certainly what he does. Some of the things, how he does it, we will never know, because we just can't work it out.
I don't think it's written down. Isn't it the case that within ISKCON, if you have taken an initiation from a guru, you can't question or challenge the guru under any circumstances?
No, you can question. You know, if your spiritual master tells you you should do this, right? You can. And see, this is the nature of the Prabhupada says the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvid hi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. So the first thing is we approach the spiritual master with respect. Pranipat. Right? Pronounce. So the mood has to be right. But then pariprasnena. It's recommended that we inquire all around about devotional service. Pari prashnam. Pari means, you know, like we have the word parikrama, which means to walk around. Pari means to, you know, go all around. So pari prashnena means to question all about things. Right? So if there's, you know, if the spiritual master says you do something, you are allowed to ask, well, you know, but it's done in the right way, not in a challenging way. You know, sometimes my spiritual master gives me some instructions. And he'll say to me, I don't expect you to do this right away. You can think about how you're going to do this. But, you know, there are some things that he says, could you please get me a cup of water? Well, you know, go and get a cup of water. That's what he wants. Right? You don't need any explanation on, you know, a purport to getting a cup of water. But there may be some more specific instruction, or not specific, more general instruction. Or, you know, sometimes it happens, especially if you're managing a community of devotees, and the senior devotees will make some suggestions. You know, do this or do that. You know, I know devotees have said to me, we want you to do this. We're not sure how you should do it. You have to go and work it out. I say, okay, great. Thanks. I'll work it out. Right? So then we can inquire, oh, right, okay, you suggest that we do this. Well, how about this problem? How about that problem? This is an issue. How do you think we should solve that? Right? So that dialogue is done in a mood of genuine inquiry so that we can arrive at the, you know, the situation that we all agree is desirable, right? So that inquiry then is desirable and recommended. So you, Prabhupada says, you know, when the spiritual master tells you he wants orange juice, you don't get milk or something else. Because that's pretty straightforward, but when it's something more a direction or an indication or a suggestion or whatever, then we can get more advice.
Okay.
Have you learned that art yet, Devaki? Yeah, it's anyway, what the heck? If you make a mistake and get chastised, we'll just have to live with it and accept it. Right? That's not bad either. You know, if you push the envelope too much, then you just get chastised, then you know you have to pull your head in. That's not bad either. Because again, you know, when I was up in Canberra, the devotees were saying how they were saying, "Oh, we want good relations amongst them," because there's been a bit of change in the management, and you know, there's always change in life, and a little bit of a disturbance from misunderstandings. There were a couple of devotees saying, "Oh, you know, we need to have better relationships amongst the devotees. You know, this is really bad." And I said, "It's not bad, actually. It's normal that there were disagreements and misunderstandings. That helps us get to the point where we can all work together if it's done in a mood of, you know, service to Krishna." And I said, "Actually, this is very common in teams, team building, that initially there will be misunderstandings and miscommunications and disagreements." But as we learn the norms, as we learn what our expectations are of each other and what the communication should be, and you know, sometimes in a team situation, some person may have strengths which we'll play on, but they may also have weaknesses, so we become aware of their weaknesses and we play to their strengths, not their weaknesses, for example. So, you know, it's not that we go out of our way to displease the devotees. Or certainly don't go out of our way to displease the spiritual master. Although that might happen. But if we get a chastisement, then we just, okay, correct, adjust, and then go on. It's not the end of existence, right? So especially if it is done in the mood of rendering service, there may be even misunderstandings, but we can correct. That's why we have the spiritual master. The spiritual master is there to direct us. And the senior devotees are there to direct us so that we can adjust things. That's their service to us. Their service to us is to help us adjust so that we get things going nicely. Of course, if a disciple is always making mistakes and always arguing with the guru, then, you know, the guru's going to just think, "Oh no, what have I got here?" Right? We should be making some correction. Although, mind you, at the same time also, you get to know the strengths of people and their weaknesses, and so generally we don't, you know, there are parts of us that are somewhat hardwired, and are very hard to, you know, the only way we're going to break that is when we leave this body. Huh?
Last question.
Okay. Your last question. Unlikely. But anyway, yeah, go on. For today. You promise?
Yes.
You might ask two questions. Be careful. I can count.
My question is, why is it necessary to know our own Creator and then love Him?
Why is it necessary to?
To know our own Creator and then...
Our own Creator.
Which is Krishna.
Yes, yeah.
And then...
and then to love Him.
Love Him or love Him?
Why is it necessary? Why is it necessary? Well, it's not. Well,
first to know Him and then to develop love for Him. Or
yeah. Well, I guess an observation. At least from others might like to comment. You know, if you don't have any relationship with someone, if there's no connection whatsoever, then it's you haven't got to the point of love, obviously. You're a long way away from love. So initially, you know, before you can love somebody, you have to be introduced to them and, you know, get to know them. Then when you get to know them, then you can develop love and affection for them.
Why is it necessary for this process?
What's that? Why is it necessary?
This whole process, why is it necessary?
Because that's the nature of relationship. You can't just love somebody right from the word go if you don't know anything about them. Although, you know, sometimes boy sees a girl and he thinks, ooh, yeah, she looks okay. And she sees him and she says, ooh. So love can develop just, you know, by some attraction. Natural. Spontaneous. There is spontaneous attraction. Just like Rukmini, she hadn't met Krishna, but she had heard about Krishna. She had a spontaneous love for him. But even then, she knew something about him. You know, if you don't have any relationship with somebody, there's no connection, you've never seen them, don't know about them, you can't have a relationship with them. But ordinarily, if you're going to have a relationship with somebody, and it's a deep and affectionate relationship, it requires, you know, cultivation of that relationship. You know, it is amazing in one sense that these devotees like Rukmini and others had this spontaneous affection for Krishna. So therefore we understand the superlative nature of their devotion. They're naturally attracted to Krishna without hardly any, or, you know, just by hearing about him basically. So we understand these devotees are in an eternal relationship with Krishna. They have so much affection for Krishna. It's just spontaneous. Like the gopis, they would just see Krishna, they were just in love, madly in love with him. Huh? Then the relationship would develop from that point more and more and more. But, you know, if you want to have a relationship with somebody, then you have to get to know them, usually. Right? Pretty hard to be friendly with somebody you don't know. Because you're not aware of your relationship. Anybody else like to make a comment on that point?
Because Creator has created us, so He knows better about His creation and He knows better.
He knows us. That's not the problem.
Yes.
We forgot. We don't know Him.
Yeah.
That's the problem. The problem is not that Krishna doesn't know us.
Yeah.
You know, this is the Indian thing. Oh, I'll go to the temple when Krishna wants me to. I'll surrender to Krishna when He wants me to. You idiot, he wants you to surrender now. You're just ignoring him. Right, so there's the problem. The problem is you, not Krishna. No. Krishna's controlling everyone. Yeah. They can skillfully manipulate the philosophy to justify anything, basically. This is what the young kids do. You know, like... Aditya was asking his father, "Are you a Uttama or a Madhyama Adhikari? What are you? Or are you Kanishta Adhikari?" And then he's complaining to his dad, "Why are you giving me so much Adibotic? Why are you giving me so much trouble if you're not an Uttama Adhikari?"
Krishna wrote these all Vedas.
Krishna didn't write, no, but his, you know,
it's all coming from him.
But he, he got Vyasadeva to do the writing. See, it's very funny. It's funny, interesting. You know, Krishna doesn't get into work so much, but even Mahavishnu, right? Mahavishnu is the creator of the universe, but when he's creating, when he's at work, what is he doing? What's he doing? Lying down, sleeping. He's sleeping. While he's creating the material universe, he's actually having a snooze on an understage, and Lakshmi's massaging his feet. Right? So how hard, you know, how hard does Lord Vishnu, how hard does Krishna work? He doesn't work at all. He just takes it easy. Right? Yes, it is. It is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the source. But when it, you know, some of these, so the manifestation of these teachings and so forth, even, as I say, the creation of the material creation, Krishna just doesn't get it. He is aloof from that. He's playing with his friends in Vrindavan and herding the cows and just playing, not working. So he, by his, that's, like I was saying, he has many potencies. He expands himself in many ways, and through those expansions, through his agents, if you like, of himself, then he teaches. So that's how the teachings come. Although Bhagavad Gita is, you know, Bhagavan Uvacha, Krishna speaking.
Means he wants all the living entities to know about him and to love him.
Yes.
That is extraordinary. He wants them to love him.
Yes. He, you know, it's just like we have a friend, but, you know, there may be a misunderstanding and we lose that relationship with our friend, but we want that relationship back again. Right? So Krishna has that connection with everybody. But, you know, when your friend chooses to ignore you, then that hurts. Huh? So you go out, although sometimes, you know, because a person is rejected so much, then you stay away from them, right? So, you know, we have rejected Krishna so much that even he stays away from us because we're such a nonsense. You know, sometimes that happens. You have a friendship with somebody, but then they mistreat you so much. Every time you see them, you just do a left turn. You don't want to. You prefer that you had a nice relationship with them, but they're just not. You know, it's not. Of course, in our relationships with others, you know, it's usually not just. You know, it's on both sides. That's why things start getting complicated. But, you know. All right, I think we should finish here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.